What is up, everyone? Welcome back to another episode of the FanCast podcast. My name is Eric Davis. As always, I am joined by Sean O'Connell. What's up, Sean?
Hey, Eric. Good to be with you.
Definitely. For those who don't know, the FanCast podcast, we are a podcast about movies. We are on Fandango.com. We are also on Movies.com, which is a sister site to Fandango. You can find us on iTunes. You can find Sean and I on Twitter. I don't know if there's a place. You could throw a rock and hit us, Sean.
Pretty much. Yeah, we're pretty active on social media, and we're very active on this podcast because we've been talking about pretty much everything coming our way, from movies upcoming and big stories that are constantly developing on a week-to-week basis, which we like to track right here on the FanCast.
Yeah, exactly. And Sean and I have been in Toronto. Our last few podcasts came from the Toronto International Film Festival, so now we're kind of taking a step back and burying ourselves back into the world of upcoming movies. Speaking of today's podcast, we're going to talk superheroes. We have some news about Thor: The Dark World, which comes out this November, and then we're going to talk about Marvel and their Marvel and Star Wars, and how Star Wars may be doing what Marvel is doing. And I want to talk about this. Some interesting things that we need to talk about there. But first, Thor: The Dark World, Sean.
Yes, sir.
Comes out November 8th.
It does.
A few big stories for Sean, for Sean the Dark World. For Sean, if Sean did have a movie, it would be called Sean the Dark World. Actually, no, it would be called Sean Living in North Carolina.
Trying to keep my kids quiet while we podcast.
Sean, trying to keep my kids quiet while we record a podcast.
Coming to a theater near you soon.
Coming to a theater on November 8th. No, Thor the Dark World hits theaters on November 8th. And tickets, because this is on Fandango, we want to mention tickets. Tickets go on sale this Tuesday for Thor the Dark World. This is a Marvel movie. Iron Man 3 made buckets full of money. I think it was the biggest box office earner of the summer. Expect people to be lining up for Thor the Dark World. Why am I having so much trouble with this freaking title?
I don't think Marvel realized what a tongue twister they gave us with this title. They need to backtrack and rewrite something.
I know. Thor the Dark World. Tickets go on sale Tuesday. Circle it on your calendar. Get your tickets in advance, especially if you want to go with your group of friends. When films like this come out, I know me and my buddies, we always go like opening weekend because it's a cool movie to see with your friends. So if you want to guarantee that you see it with your friends, go buy tickets this Tuesday over on Fandango. Also, let's move on. A new extended trailer for Thor: The Dark World. I think it's like two minutes, 37 seconds thereabouts. Not a ton of new footage. There are new little pockets of footage, though, that are in there. And it looks good. I mean, it looks like it's expanding the universe of what we saw in the first film. It's got lots of fighting of dark elves, and Loki seems to have a really interesting part. And I know recently we had talked, Sean, about them going back and shooting additional scenes with Loki. I found out at Toronto from a friend at the Huffington Post who interviewed Tom Hiddleston that was actually Hiddleston's idea. He pitched a scene or two to Kevin Feige, and okay. And Kevin Feige said, let's go shoot that. And they went back and shot it. So actually the new stuff that they shot of Loki was Hiddleston's idea.
I wonder where in the film that's going to fall. I mean, this has been such a fascinating production because it's the first Marvel film that we've heard any ripples of, not problems per se, but just the fact that it seemed to be shifting gears every once in a while, you know, and you heard Alan Taylor might have been having some problems in during production and in post-production. And then there was a story that broke, you know, today that Joss Whedon was like, helicoptered in, you know, via, I'm guessing, the S.H.I.E.L.D. Helicarrier, basically, and dropped on the set and like, did real quick punch-ups and made some scenes lighter and they moved quicker. And it was just problems that Alan Taylor was having. And, you know, I wonder what that speaks to, Eric, because here we have this Marvel slate of films that they're rolling out, and they all have release dates, and these directors are hired and told to hit these release dates. And, you know, for most of the films, groundwork is being laid. But you wonder what happens when the story isn't completely locked into place, and when a co-star like Hiddleston, and I'm sure that the scenes are fine, but when a co-star can pitch, you know, after the ball is already rolling, hey, how about a few more scenes with my character, and then they accommodate him? I find that pretty fascinating.
It is pretty fascinating. You know, it's I feel like they sort of made a turn right after that first Thor movie in terms of finding the right tone for these Marvel films. And I think a lot of that had to do when Disney picked up the property. But, you know, Iron Man 2 was a misstep. That was a rushed film. I did not feel complete to me. And that was my least favorite Marvel movie. Iron Man 2, The Incredible Hulk, and then Thor. I feel like though all of those first round of films, including the original Iron Man, they kind of tried to find the right tone. I feel like they were more serious, especially the Hulk movie, especially the first Iron Man. And then Thor sort of had a weird time with tone as well. And then they find it in Captain America. And I feel like Captain America on, they've really had this great synergy. So I could see Thor the Dark World having similar problems tonally that the first Thor had. I think it's interesting, and it goes to show how important Joss Whedon is now for the future of Marvel. I mean, they're airlifting this guy onto sets. I feel like there was something similar I heard, and I don't know if this is accurate, I don't know if it's true, but the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. show that's about to premiere on ABC, I heard that they were having some scripting issues too, and Joss Whedon had to come in. I mean, they are just kind of taking this guy and just, okay, who needs you? Captain America, the Winter Soldier, go, throw, go, Joss, go long. Here's a Joss Whedon. I'm throwing Joss Whedon onto the set.
Well, you know? And I got to believe that he's at least tracking the progress of all of these, you know, because they're all going to feed into his Avengers sequel. And so he needs to know where the different things fall. And maybe, you know, as he's working on the screenplay for Age of Ultron, he realizes, wow, it'd be great to have a line or two that shouts out to something that I want to do in this sequel. And that's what is so interesting about these movies and how, you know, the individual standalone films are a tapestry that's leading into the larger Avengers sequel, and having Whedon being able to oversee all of this and contribute in spots like that when he can. I think that is a cool way that Marvel's handling it. And I'm not trying to throw DC under the bus. I'm not trying to take swings at them, but it does point to how far behind in that process they are, that they can't go to somebody who's their quote unquote, you know, overseer and just say, oh, it'd be so good to put something into Thor, because we know that we want to do it in Avengers, and maybe it'll weave through Captain America. They just have the big picture spelled out.
Yeah, Joss Whedon understands it. And it goes to show how important someone like him is. You know, Everybody talks about Kevin Feige, and Kevin Feige is a brilliant guy, don't get me wrong. But Whedon is just such a fantastic storyteller, and he's got great dialogue. He's got great character involvement. He knows how to deal with ensemble casts. I don't know if they're flying him in, though, to connect the dots. I think they're flying him in because these scenes aren't working, and they need Joss Whedon to help them.
Yeah, that might be true, and if so, that concerns me a little bit, because how do you not realize that a scene that, hey, you know, once you start filming it, sometimes certain flaws can come to the surface.
That's what Taylor said. I think they quoted him, and he said, you know, once we started filming it, it didn't look as good as it did on the page, and that happens. I mean, you have to understand, they write these things on a page. And then they hope it looks as awesome as it does in text. And sometimes it doesn't. It doesn't. It doesn't work. You know. Right. And I feel like this Thor: The Dark World is going to be different tonally than that first movie. And it's going to be about capturing the essence of that first movie, but putting it in a post-Avengers world where they are a little bit more humorous. They are a little bit more funny. And so I'm interested to see how this next Thor movie handles that balance. I like what I've seen so far from it. I think it looks really cool. And I think it takes a lot to admit that we were having problems with some scenes, but we brought Joss Whedon in and he punched it up for us. You know, they could have just left it be. And so I think that says something that they did that.
Well, we're looking forward to another franchise that's trying to learn from what Marvel's doing. And there's some comings and goings on the Star Wars front. And no, it's not casting. And no, it's not a release date. And no, it's not a title. And it's all these other things that we believed that we should be hearing pretty soon. But what are we hearing from the Star Wars universe, Eric?
Well, yeah, I thought it was interesting. Our friends at Film School Rejects did a post. How Star Wars is taking the Marvel approach to their movies. And this is something that I was actually tossing around in my head last week, and I almost tweeted it out, was that if you look at Star Wars Episode 7, it's kind of technically their Avengers movie. Wow. The news in the last week is that Star Wars, they officially announced, Disney said, our other movies are going to be origin stories, these solo movies that we're working on. You know, because let's remember, let's back up here, they're doing a trilogy of sequels to Return of the Jedi. So it's going to be a trilogy of movies that happen after Return of the Jedi, beginning with Episode 7. That is supposed to come out in 2015. In between these movies, these sequels, they're going to do solo movies. We're learning that these solo movies are indeed going to be origin stories. And it's almost similar to what Marvel did, where they started off with their solo origin stories and built up to this big team-up movie in the Avengers. But Star Wars seems to be reversing that, taking a page out of Marvel, though, doing their big Episode 7, their big, you know, everybody together movie first, and then going to another solo, an origin story, which I think is going to be Han Solo. I think that's going to be the first, that's everybody's saying that's going to be the first solo movie that they do after Episode 7 is going to be a Han Solo origin.
Aha, solo movie. Very funny. I get it.
It is technically a solo movie, and people are saying they may want Han Solo to be their Iron Man. Like, he could be the connective tissue between these films. I mean, and they could set something up in Episode 7 that makes us want to return and see how Han Solo began.
Well, first off, it's such a different property. We both acknowledge this.
Yes.
It's Star Wars. They don't have to follow someone else's blueprint. They have the blueprint, basically, you know. When you talk about a Han Solo movie, and I think that that's a great idea. You know, I think that's fantastic that if they want to start doing standalone films and maybe prequels, and they want to do Star Wars characters that fans love, and Han Solo is the first one they want to do, awesome. But you better cast that role right, because those are quite possibly some of the biggest shoes that you could fill, you know, in geek culture, not just in the Star Wars universe, but in geek culture. You know, you're able to put Ewan McGregor in Ben Kenobi's robes and it works. You know, we're willing to go with it. But when you try and find somebody who lives up to what Harrison Ford, in the prime of being Harrison Ford, delivered, I couldn't wrap my brain around it as a young actor rising up to that challenge, you know, to take on that role. And for, if Disney and Lucasfilm are able to get that correct, then they, I think, have bought themselves years of fan goodwill if they deliver a winning, you know, standalone Han Solo film.
Yeah, I think it can be done. I'm one of these people that I'm not saying don't ever touch, you can't touch it. You know, I don't think we should put films in a museum and say you can't touch this at all, because the original still exists. Han Solo still exists,
right,
and these are just additional stories that you could either watch or not watch and enjoy however you want to enjoy them. I think the Han Solo character is a character that, yeah, he's unique to Harrison Ford, but we can throw a young actor in there, and it's got to be a young actor that's good. I agree. I mean, you can't put Zac Efron in it, you know. I know
somebody
that
Photoshop that for us, please. Photoshop Zac Efron on Han Solo picture.
I have nothing against Zac Efron. I just don't think he'd make a good Han Solo. But, like, you know, and it's weird to see these actors from the Star Trek universe. And I, you know, a lot of people were saying that Benedict Cumberbatch is going to be the big villain in Star Wars Episode 7. Hasn't been announced yet, but you know, Chris Pine. I look at what they do with his character.
Yeah,
his Kirk, his rebooted Kirk,
yeah.
And I see a Han Solo. I see that's how a young Han Solo would be. And you know, that's what I look at when I think of, like, the Han Solo, the young Han Solo movie. I look at something like J.J. Abrams' Star Trek reboot, and I'm not saying that both films have been ridiculously successful in what they were trying to attempt, but they have been really entertaining films, and you know. I think you go to a hardcore Star Trek fan, you say, okay, we're gonna cast a young a young William Shatner in a Kirk role, and right. they're like, ah, you know, how do you do that? How do you?
Yeah.
And but I feel like Chris Pine has pulled it off. So, you know, I think they can do it. And you have to understand, a lot of the people that are going to be watching these new Star Wars movies did not grow up with the original movies like we did. They grew
right.
up. They grew up with the prequels. They grew
right,
up with the
right,
prequels.
Right.
They grew up with the Legos. Your kids, for example,
yes,
are going to go see this new Star Wars movie. I'm sure they're Star Wars fans. But what was their first introduction? It's got to be what, the Lego video game?
Yes, it absolutely was. And they got to know all the characters through that. And then once they were, you know, they probably played on those games for a year before I finally was like, all right, time to bust out the movies. But when I started showing them the movies, I started with episode four. And we went, you know, I read a column that one of our colleagues, Drew McWeeny, wrote. And I thought he got it right. And I followed his model. We did New Hope and then Empire. And then we stopped, you know, with that revelation about Darth Vader. And then we went and did the three prequels to sort of fill in who he is, and then ended with Jedi. And Drew argued that that's the progression that it probably should go in. Excuse me as my phone rings. Some of my kids were able to sort of follow it that way. But you're right. I mean, this is a younger audience that's coming in with knowledge, a deeper knowledge of the universe, with a knowledge that extends to the prequels. And, you know, I think that Abrams has taken that into consideration. I think that the people at Lucasfilms, Kathleen Kennedy's taken this into consideration. And they'll build from that way. I just, you know, we keep hearing these stories about how there's going to be a Star Wars movie in theaters every year. And it all still just feels like this great pie in the sky, you know, dreaming until we hear concrete details. And I'm still scratching my head wondering why we're not hearing concrete details. Movies coming in 2015 that we know a lot more about than we do about Star Wars.
Yeah, I agree. I don't know why we're not hearing more. And it's unfortunate because a lot of the things we are hearing are all just rumors. It's all people trying to scoop things. You know, we heard it's going to come out in December 2015. We heard this, we heard that. And I guess you got to think, because it's such an important property, and because J.J. Abrams is involved, and because he really pays a lot of attention to the veil of secrecy. They call it J.J. Abrams' mystery box. He gets a lot of flack for it. Mm-hmm. But, you know, he likes to preserve details until he's ready to tell you about them. I don't know what they're waiting for. I guess they're waiting kind of to make sure it's all right, to make sure it's all lined up with what they want. But it's interesting. It's interesting to see and to hear little bits of this plan. I guess I got to ask you, and we'll start finishing this up now, but I go back and forth on how much pressure is on this episode 7. You know, I remember I was going back and forth with Scott, who wrote that Film School Rejects column, because I think that everything relies on episode 7, because this is going to be the reintroduction of Star Wars through Disney. And this is going to tell us a lot about what we should expect in their next big plan.
Right.
And if this doesn't land with some kind of force, excuse the pun.
You're all over the place today.
I am all over the place today.
I love it.
But I mean, if it doesn't land,
right,
then that's got to be bad for the next batch of films. I mean, Scott argued, he said, no, it's okay. Even if it lands so-so, they still have this origin story to fall back on, and it could be completely different. I mean, what do you think?
I agree with you 100% that they are getting one chance to get it right at this stage, because, you know, this whole fool me once, shame on me, fool me twice. It's going to be the same situation where fans lined up, you know, around the theater for midnight screenings of Phantom Menace, because here it is, Star Wars is back. We've waited long enough. What are we going to get? And you got Jar Jar Binks and a cold, you know, digital world. And so we're being told that JJ's using practical effects and he's going to try and get back to the tone of the original trilogy. And I think that fans are willing to keep their minds open and trust in what they're being told. But you're exactly right, dude. If it doesn't connect with the audience, they're not going to be looking forward to, oh, all right, we'll get the next summer. And I'm not saying that they're going to ignore what comes after that. Of course, they're going to line up for it. But there's only so many times that you can keep going back to the well of trust and goodwill with a fan base before you burn them too many times. And they just don't want to, you know, then they'll just keep clinging to the original trilogy and saying these were standalone, really special films that existed probably in my golden memories. And they were, and no other films were ever going to live up to those. But, you know, JJ has a really good opportunity, and I think a really tough opportunity, you know, to put this franchise back on a track that can live up to the high expectations of fans. But dude, think about this. If you're playing a game, you know, a sporting event, a basketball game, let's put it to this. You know, it's 2 seconds left in the game, your team is down by one, and you're at the free throw with two shots to shoot. That type of pressure is what I'm afraid the people tied to this Star Wars are facing right now. I think they have to realize in the back of their mind, if we don't get this right, we're in trouble. And if you miss those two free throws, you lose the game. And so I can't imagine trying to perform under that pressure. And I really do honestly believe, without exaggerating, that they are under that level of pressure.
Yeah, I agree. You know, and I just hope that they seem to be spending a lot of time trying to recreate the essence of those original movies. And I hope that they, at the same time, also try to give us something new and something that we haven't seen from Star Wars yet, and take that chance. Because I really like if they are going to take any kind of page from Marvel, I really like what Marvel does with these solo films, how they trust new directors. They got guys that did Community episodes doing the Captain America movie. They brought Alan Taylor, who did Game of Thrones, to do Thor. They plucked Joss Whedon. Out of Wonder Woman detention jail,
yeah,
and gave him arguably the biggest movie of the decade. You know, I hope that they look at those choices that Marvel makes,
right?
And they take some of that over to Star Wars. We can only hope. But I want to end here, and I want to ask you this one question because I'm curious for myself. But I like that pattern that you showed your kids, journey, Star Wars.
And I'm 4, 5, 1, 2, 3, and then 6.
I find that really interesting, and I'm curious. As your kids, these are kids that grew up with the Lego video games. This is their first introduction.
Yes.
To Star Wars. Which films did they connect with more?
The prequels.
Yeah.
But it's a weird thing because they also, at that time, were watching and reading books that were the Clone Wars, in which Anakin, young Anakin, is a hero. You know, he's a central figure. And so my kids, Anakin is to them what Luke Skywalker was to us. They love Anakin. They love young Obi-Wan. And so when they sat down to watch Episode 4, it was very strange for them to see Alec Guinness, you know, and to see an old Obi-Wan. And that's such an odd thing that Lucas did, you know, by going back and making an animated Clone Wars series and putting the onus on Anakin, you know, knowing where he's going as a character. So they kind of, you know, they endured A New Hope, and then they really got into it with Empire, because it's just there's cooler gadgets and there's bigger things going on in Empire, and they bought into that. But they were looking forward to finding out what happened in the prequels, and they don't mind the pace of the prequels. They're not turned off by the artificialness of it, because you know they're from a digital age now at this point. That stuff doesn't bother them. And the Revenge of the Sith, then when they saw Anakin turn, it really affected them. It totally bothered them to the point where they didn't want to watch Jedi. And I was like, just trust me, you know, it's going in the right direction. But they hated Anakin after he turned because he was their hero. It'd be like if we had a version of Star Wars where Luke Skywalker went full evil, you know, and it was really interesting to see it through their eyes that way.
It's interesting, you know, and I just bring this up as the last topic just because I'm curious to know how they approach these. How do you approach sequels to the original trilogy,
right,
when the majority of people that you're selling it to are more into the prequels because that's the age they grew up in?
Yeah.
And it's just interesting, you know, because the original trilogy are the better movies, the better stories. But the prequels are what I think a majority of the audience relate to, especially because these kids are all coming up through the Clone Wars. They're all coming up through these animated series, these Lego video games. And that's, like you said, your kids care more about Anakin than they do Luke. And that's it's interesting to see.
When you talk about standalone films, too, you know, there's a contingent, the vocal contingent of the older fans who are like, we want to see a Boba Fett movie. But my kids don't know Boba Fett. They know Darth Maul, you know. And so if you're Lucasfilm, which ones do you pluck from, Yeah, they know Han Solo because he's a standout character, but like they don't really care about Jabba the Hutt. You know, they're more interested in seeing like the Emperor or Count Dooku. Count Dooku is a big thing for them. When they play Jedi Legos, one of them plays Count Dooku and one of them plays Darth Maul all the time.
So. Sean, let's end there. Thank you very much. And we're going to talk about Star Wars, I think, every friggin' week for the rest of our lives.
Yes.
Because it's big. It's big. It's important
for the rest of our lives. I love that.
It's important for us. It's important for you. But look, thank you very much for listening. I'm going to circle back. Thor tickets go on sale this Tuesday over at Fandango. Comes out November 8th. Go buy your tickets. Tell them we sent you.
See it in IMAX. See it in 3D. Marvel's one of the few studios that really does deliver on their 3D, and they deliver on their IMAX. And if you have Alan Taylor behind the camera, I think you're going to want to see his visuals. I was lucky enough to go to the set and see what he's doing in Asgard. He's using a lot of actual physical sets. He's using a ton of digital, obviously, but like I was on Malekith's ship. It was an actual ship, and so you're going to want to see it on the IMAX. Trust me.
Sounds awesome. All it does is have me jonesing for more Game of Thrones episodes. Sean O'Connell, thank you very much for joining me this week.
Always a pleasure.
And thank you for listening. Comment away. Tell us anything you want. Tell us your life story in the comment section. We will reply. We will give you advice, life advice from the Fancast, as long as it pertains to movies. Thank you very much, everybody, and enjoy your week at the movies.